Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. Gonna be bright sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893. Or if you're feeling radio shy, you can always email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my co-host for tonight, I just want to make a couple of comments. That number one, our healing weekend, just weeks away in Washington, D.C., right outside of Washington. And it's really going to be a dynamic weekend. Some of our women from our Philadelphia weekend will be returning. I'm so excited. Some from other healing weekends. So we have people at all different phases, some who are just starting their healing. So it's bound to be really the most life-changing weekend that you can ever imagine. If you haven't been to one, you need to come. There's no charge for it. You just have the cost of the hotel and the meal. And that's my gift to our women that I'd like to give to make sure that everybody's on track and moving ahead the best that they can. So if you're interested, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And please put in the headline Healing Weekend, and I'll be happy to send you the information while there's still room, because it is filling up and people are really coming from all over the country. So get your reservation in early. Also, I want to send my love to Jen, who's in recovery in Texas. Jen, you know our whole group loves you, and we're all rooting for you. You're a hero to all of us, so we hope you're feeling better. So without any further ado, I'm going to introduce my co-host for tonight, my dear friend, Dr. Brian Hooper. Brian, welcome back for the monthly show.
Good evening, Bonnie. I am, as usual, delighted to be here and to be able to be with you, my friend.
Thank you, Brian. I know that you're so comforting to our women who always have so many questions. And tonight I told them that I would be discussing an issue with you because it's just come up in the last couple of days, and maybe you've read some stuff about this yourself. And there's two kind of different issues that we can talk about concerning the same general problem. And one story came out, I don't know if you saw it today or yesterday, about an anti-gay Michigan pastor resigns after being caught on Grindr. Have you seen that?
that was making the news, unless it's a different pastor. It was making the news a couple of months ago. So it may be yet another pastor, wouldn't surprise me.
And maybe not. Maybe it's just somehow reaching us over here. I'm just trying to see if there's a date on it. But the article says Pastor Matthew McKella resigned from his post to St. John's Lutheran Church and School in Michigan after he was caught chatting on a gay hookup app.
Right.
The Michigan pastor who once rallied against same-sex marriage was caught soliciting sex on a gay hookup app.
Yep.
Matthew McKella, an associate professor, right, so this did come out a while ago.
Yes.
Because it's just hitting some of us right now. But it brought up the issue of several things. First of all, our women are thinking, you know, a few of them, not all of them. Of course, this was involving Grindr, the application for casual sex or just any sex. And, you know, we're familiar with Grindr, but people are saying that Grindr is the creator of so much sexual addiction, which I think is not true. I mean, in my opinion, maybe it gives you better access, but it's certainly not going to change who you are to start with. And before they had Grindr, there were other ways to meet people. Am I right on that or no?
Oh, yeah. There were always other ways to meet people. Sure. This just makes it very instantaneous. People can see who's on, and if they're of a mind to have quick sex, they can you know, do it very quickly. The other thing is it continues to objectify people more and more because, you know, a lot of people will put out naked pictures of themselves out there or just their torso or something. And it can be like looking through a catalog for what, you know, sort of the dish du jour. So it can sort of feed the compulsion, if you will, of some people to always, you know, be going after what the next thing.
You know, it's interesting
it
that many
available.
Years ago, I guess I'm sorry, go ahead.
I might add one more thing. And there are people on Grindr who, they really are there just to date and make friends. Not everybody that's on Grindr is looking for a quick hookup. I would say the majority are, but not all.
See, that's news to me because I really did think it was a hookup app. But I know that back in the 1960s, I'll go back that far, there were no computers and no way to have apps that people could meet up with each other.
No, you had to cruise the parks or go to the bookstores or go to the gay bars to meet people or sometimes put ads in the newspaper, you know, personal.
Right. I was going to say that, you know, I had a boss who I worked for who was kind of like a sex addict, you know, he was straight, but, you know, he was always into swinging and different couple things. And it always shocked me because of the fact that he would bring magazines into the office, you know, as a one-person office, and we were very good friends. But I was not familiar with his lifestyle. What was I, 19, 20, 21? You know, I really wasn't that familiar with seeing people's pictures in these magazines discussing what kind of sex they were looking for with a couple. And I thought, wow, like, what do their mothers see this? You know, are they so bold they're going to put their picture in a magazine? But I think it was always there. It was just accessed differently. I don't think that Grindr, you know, makes things worse. I just think that there were always other avenues, right?
Right. It just makes it easier and more available for folks who are looking for quick sex.
Mm-hmm. But if they didn't have Grindr, they would find another way, right?
Of course they would. People are very ingenious.
Yes. And sometimes you don't have to do anything. You just be walking down the street. It's not like you have to really go out and do much to find it when you're looking for it. But also, the other issue that kind of also ties in with this is one of the women in my support group had posted this, that she said, I just read Beyond Shades of Gray, an approach of gay behavior is learned behavior that is triggered by some past trauma associated with abusive relationship, such as an example, parents that did not give the child unconditional love. Men will look for missing love of the father, role model, or other men willing to fill his insecurity through homosexual relationship. With the biblical love and Christian morals, the author proves restoration to heterosexual. It is a very realistic, and I wonder, do you think triggered your husband to process his crossover to homosexual life? So, look, I know this woman. She's very sincere. People are always looking for reasons why, and they don't want to accept what the reality is. And you and I both know this is not the reality. The reality is that people don't become gay because they have a father who doesn't show them unconditional love. Is that correct?
This is just another version of a permutation of if you have a weak father and a strong-willed mother, it will make you a gay boy, you know. It's sort of another version of that whole thing, and that's been completely disproven. Sexual abuse of a child, a male child, doesn't make him gay. It will traumatize him. And make any orientation that he has, be it gay or straight, fraught with challenges as the child matures, but it doesn't make a person gay. I also have and we've discussed this before, a theory that would explain, you know, why it is that some gay men found themselves abused as boys is because the perpetrator picked up on something different that was vulnerable and, you know, abused them, but it didn't make them gay.
I know. And I just think that maybe they had more of a, you know, maybe they were victimized more because, you know, sometimes men can tell children, you know, when they're growing up that they're going to be gay. I know that.
And don't tell. I'll tell on you if you ever let anybody know we've had this special thing. I'll tell the world that, you know. And it's just another version of the kind of abuse that abusers do with children, male or female.
Yeah. I just know that it's so complicated, you know, with the sexual abuse that a lot of men use the abuse excuse. And I'm not saying that they haven't been abused. I'm not trying to negate that. I'm just saying
that
abuse, don't become a...
Or that abuse can be a confusing. It can be confusing in terms of what does it mean to be a sexual creature? Where do I end and other people begin? Is it okay for me to own my own body and have control over it? And that doesn't mean they're going to be confused about what their orientation is, but they can be confused about feeling okay or not okay about it.
Right. And, you know, it's understandable, but I think a lot of times when you resolve it, your sexual orientation will not change.
You are
who you are. And
you'd be more
comfortable. You'll be more comfortable, but I can't say that it's causing men to become homosexual, because to me, that would be the same analogy as if you had a girl who was sexually abused, which we have many women who are sexually abused, and they don't necessarily then look to go back and revisit by going into bondage and discipline. I mean, that's mm-hmm. kind of like how I equate it, that if you want to go mm-hmm. back to something that was so hurtful and harmful, then why not look for a guy who's going to beat you? So
right.
Maybe there are some women who are into those kind of relationships, but that didn't make them into those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind mm-hmm. of like it's the same analogy. You can't turn somebody mm-hmm. into something that they're not. On the other hand, I have a woman who recently wrote to me, and she's living with a husband who's gay. Mm-hmm. And she was not bothered by it. She said, we never had really much sex, which was fine with me because I hate sex. So I said to her, well, what would cause you to hate sex? She says, well, I was very badly sexually abused when I was growing up. So now, whenever, you know, a man would touch me, all those memories come back. And, of course, you know, what can I tell her except, you know, maybe you can get it resolved in therapy. But she said, I've been
right,
in therapy,
yeah.
and at this point in my life, you know, she's in her 50s, she says, I just don't care anymore. You know, I don't want to have sex. So sometimes those kinds of relationships can work out. You know, I say sometimes there's a prototype of a woman that a gay man, you know, seeks out when he's looking for a marriage, consciously or subconsciously or whichever. But, you know, one of the prototypes are women who have been sexually abused because they're not going to be aggressive. They're not going to be pressuring you for sex all the time. And I've seen that happen in relationships. And, you know, it's worked itself. I'm not going to say it's a traditional relationship or one that a traditional woman would ever want to have, but in special circumstances where there's been abuse, you know, I can see where this would happen, and it can work as long as she's able to turn her eyes away from what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. She can't expect him to live without sex just because she wants to live without sex.
Yeah.
But there are, these are like exceptions to the rule. I'm talking about the mainstream situations. You can always find exceptions, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, there. Yes, of course, of course. In a situation like the one you just described, I would want to know what her expectations of the relationship are and of the man are. And is there any other kind of hurt, that emotional hurt she's having because maybe he steps out on her, but they don't talk about it, nothing's been agreed to. What kind of further wounding is continuing to happen emotionally? I don't know. I mean, maybe they have a complete understanding and she's not being wounded at all. I don't, you know.
No, I don't think so. She wrote to me because she's being wounded.
She
didn't care about sex, you know, and I said to her, it's really not fair to think that he's not going to care about it.
Right. Then
you know,
what,
I just say it's not really fair to do that.
Right. I wonder what she's getting out of staying in this relationship then, and why wouldn't it be better if they both went their own ways?
I don't know. I see a lot of codependency in some of the women who write to me based on codependency.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell you it's based on love. It's based on codependency. That some people just have to have somebody in their life, and no matter how ridiculous the relationship is or no matter how painful it is, they still would rather keep it than give it up. And at that point, you know, I tell them that you really need help, you know, beyond, I mean, there's no such thing as getting relationship help. How do you help a relationship where there's codependency?
Well, right, exactly. And when it's so mismatched as it is in her situation, he's never going to be really available to her. I mean, I don't think, as I understand the scenario. I think there are some relationships where one person is dependent in a way that's not I mean, there are the cases where people are physically dependent because they have a handicap that they something has happened to them. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the sense that one is clinging on to the other in a very anxious kind of way, and there's this tension that exists between them because one is afraid to assert him or herself in a healthy way, simply because they're afraid that their partner is going to take that in a way that feels like abandonment, and it's what somebody once referred to as that cling-clung kind of relationship, or use the term codependency. I think for those folks where they're sexually matched, you know, where there's personality styles or things that they enjoyed when they first got together, that there is help for helping them get over the codependency to have a healthy relationship. For the person who's the more anxious one to learn how to control his or her anxiety, so that the person has the freedom to live a normal life, coming and going without feeling extremely anxious. I'm thinking of one client I have right now who every time he leaves the house, you know, the wife is basically saying to him, "Oh, you're going to leave me behind. You're abandoning me." You know, and if she can get over her anxiety of that and recognize that, no, there's stability there and he's only going to the grocery store, it could be so much more fulfilling for both of them.
I just think that life is much too complicated when you have to, I mean, there's always going to be those Christian counselors or people out there who say that they can change, that they were gay, but now through Jesus that they've been saved. And they're kind of what I've categorized them as dry gays, almost like dry alcoholics. Well, they are, because they're not acting on it, but they're miserable anyway. It's not like now they became straight and they're happy because of it. You know, they're not going out and doing what they want to do, and they're changing their actions. But mentally, it doesn't make them a happy person saying, oh, thank goodness I'm straight. I feel so much better now, right?
Yeah, it's engineered heteronormative conformity. This is what a man looks like. This is how a man walks. This is how a man talks. This is how a man interacts with other men. Here's the template. Now you go follow that, and you'll be just fine. And after all, you're a heterosexual inside. You're just confused. So here's the little template. We've taken you to Pray the Gay Away camp, and you've been here for a week, and you've tossed a football back and forth with the other guys. And, you know, we've sung songs and prayed together, and you've gone to Bible study, and we've let you know you really are straight. You just were misperceiving things. So every time that you misperceive something, you just now go remind yourself you're really straight and you'll be fine. You know, and people may be able to hold that together for a month or two or three, but the tension becomes so great they act out again.
You know,
and they do things behind their wife's back.
It was interesting to see some of the comments that the women were making to this woman who brought this up from the support group, you know, because they were not in agreement with her at all. You know, they were just saying that it's flawed reasoning and that they're born this way and, you know, that they can act, they can become celibate, but it's not that they're really not gay.
It's an enforced kind of celibacy. It's not like people who genuinely have a gift of celibacy and they're very content with it. But those are few and far between. Otherwise, it's just conforming to a rule.
I think one of the confusions, and maybe you can explain this, Brian, because you're a gay man, and you know you've dealt with this a lot with the people that you're working with. What's so confusing to some of the women is the fact that many of our husbands lack in sex, you know, within a short amount of time. But some of these guys, even though it's not like a, you know, often thing, but they're still able to have sexual relations with their wife.
Mm-hmm.
And women
mm-hmm.
don't get it. They say if they're really gay, now this is like 20 years into the marriage. I'm not talking about at the beginning.
Right, right. How
for
do
a
they,
lot
how
of
do
us,
they
it
perform?
Was at the beginning.
Right, and how does it seem like it's sort of enjoyable for them, right?
Sort of, not necessarily great, but okay.
Right, yeah.
But they're able to perform.
So I'm thinking of a recent client who said to me, well, listen, and this is not unusual. I, this is not the first nor will be the last time I hear this. I married this woman because I thought I was doing the right thing. I married this woman because I really liked her. We get along great. She's my best friend. Now I've been married to her for X number of years. And, you know, we've got kind of a routine. We know each other's patterns and likes and dislikes. It's comfy. It fits like, you know, a comfortable pair of house shoes fit, which is not to say, hey, it's thrilling. It's just comfortable. We have sex and, you know, there's pleasure there. I reach orgasm. It feels nice. But when I ask them, is there anything you notice that's quantitatively different in your heart between relating to this woman and to this male lover you picked up over here on the side? Is there anything that's qualitatively different for you being held by a woman versus being held by a man? And they answer, absolutely, it's very different. And I said, and which makes your heart feel full? Well, it's being with the man, to be honest with you. Well, there you have it. So, yes, they can get some nerve endings to tingle and feel really nice. And, you know, sex can be okay. But it's like it's half of it's missing because it's the passion of the heart isn't in it with the women like it is with other men.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I guess they're able to perform just to keep up the premise. Is that, would you think that's more of it, what it is? It's not like they're actually lusting after their wives.
Oh, no, no. In fact, you know, they've said to me, of course, she's the one that attempts to initiate it, you know,
mm-hmm.
Or want it. And it's like, okay. And then I've met men who, you know, said to me, ugh, I never liked it. I can't even do it anymore. It's repulsive to me. You know, so there is a bit of a spectrum there. I'm not talking about the Kinsey spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying there's a bit of a spectrum of pleasure that's there for gay men from absolutely nothing to, yeah, I mean, I can do it and it's okay, but I wouldn't miss it if it wasn't happening.
I think that, no, I've heard this from several gay men who've told me that they have had sex with their wives because it is what's expected of them. So once in
mm-hmm.
a while, they have
sure.
to do it. And
right.
they can fantasize it. You know, a lot of these men want to be in a sexual position where they're not looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of women who tell me this, that, you know, it's because it's not personalized at all. You don't have to look at the face of the person. And
mm-hmm.
men can fantasize about who they're with if they're not looking at them. They're, you know, coming
mm-hmm.
in from the back there, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't
mm-hmm.
have to be any kind of personal looking, this is my wife. And men have told me they really fantasize about men while they're doing it. And that's
mm-hmm.
how they're able to do it. But it's almost like I tell women, just as much as you're thinking about how you're going to get your husband into bed, you know, and women come up with 400 plans a week, you know, trying to seduce their husbands to want to have sex with them, that the
right.
men are thinking of 400 ways that they don't have to. Because they know it's a matter of time until they're going to be expecting it. How many headaches, toothaches, you know, earaches, backaches,
right.
stress
right.
aches can you
right.
have?
Right.
And keep making
and
it like the wife is the annoying one because she wants to have sex. I mean,
right.
you know.
Yeah, well. Yep. Meanwhile,
but I think going back to
much more about. Meanwhile, he's probably fantasizing much more about the opportunity to be with other men.
And also, I think part of it also is what you've said in the past. If you didn't sign up for it, you know, then you don't have to stick with it. And I think that it's so painful for many of the women who are living this daily life trying to make something fit that's never going to fit.
Right. Right.
They're trying to make it into a marriage.
And listen, Bonnie, I think the marriage vows are very important, that people go into marriage believing that they're going to stay together through thick and thin, okay? And so if somebody develops MS in the relationship, God forbid, you know, you stand by your partner through this, okay? But when it's a mixed match to start with and both parties in many cases don't even recognize it because the woman thinks she's marrying a straight man and the man thinks he's going to be just fine. He's maybe had a few experiences in, you know, high school or one and two while he was in the fraternity, but I was drunk then and kind of forgets the fact that he's always noticing men at the showers when he's at the gym. And, you know, he was raised to be a straight boy and the church expects this and mom expects this and, you know, everybody else expects it in the small town. So I'll just get married and everything will be fine. And he went into it thinking he was doing the right thing, but he really wasn't competent in the first place to engage in that marriage because he didn't have the full information either. And he comes to it later.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of ignorance when it comes to understanding homosexuality. And it can be very confusing for guys who think that, you know, it will go away if they fall in love. I mean, so many of the men who write to me, it's always the same story. I can predict it. I know what it's going to be. I could actually tell them word for word what their letters to me are going to say. And they always say, oh, and, you know, because sometimes they'll say, I really need to talk to you. And I'll say, let me tell you what happened. And I'll say, you fell in love with somebody. You really believed that, you know, this would be the love. You know, I go through the whole thing and they always say, oh, how did you know? Because it's very predictable. Because
right,
it is confusing when you're able to perform sexually. And I hope I'm not saying something out of place, Brian, but I really do believe there are some gay men who, no matter if you had a gun to their head, they could not perform with a woman.
Yeah,
would you say that's
true? Absolutely.
Yeah, I've met some who, no matter what you would do, if their life depended on it, it just couldn't happen. But there are other men who it's different. And when they see they can sexually perform, they're thinking, well, if I do the right thing, if I get married, if I fall in love with a woman, I don't think they're trying to trick us when they start out. They're just trying to trick themselves.
That's
they're
right.
Trying to fool Mother Nature. But,
that's right.
Yeah, I mean, and like I say, they're just trying to prove that what they're feeling will go away because you've been told by the church that it will go away. Or that you don't have to be like this. And I really do believe in my heart that they start out with the right intentions, but it was just the wrong situation. But instead of just letting it go, see, I could deal with that, and I do understand it. What I can't understand is what happens afterwards. Like when you recognize that, look, I am not straight, I'm gay. Like, 20% or 22% right now, the women who are part of our support network have STDs that their husbands bring home to them. You know, they're able, without any regard, that they're going to be spreading them. And I mean, it's not all HIV. I have a few women with HIV, but a lot of women who have other kinds of STDs, from gonorrhea to syphilis to herpes, things that will last for a lifetime that you'll never get, you know, you'll always have that scar.
Right.
With herpes, you know, you never get rid of it. And the husbands sit and blame them. You know, they turn to them and say, you must have done something. You must be cheating on me. You know, the fact that they could be so cruel on top of it. You know, you claim you love a person. And this is what I tell the men who come to me. You know, if you want to get out of your marriage, I understand that. And you need to live your authentic life and find the happiness that you're entitled to. But you can't do it at the expense of hurting someone who loves you, who's been good to you. You know, you have to give her the emotional and financial support you know, that she's counting on after 20, 25, 30 years, rather than just,
absolutely,
you know, torturing her and then walking away and then holding her responsible, right?
Right. That's exactly
why did it get
right
like that, Brian?
Well, you know, in addition to sexual orientation, we also have occasional personality disorders. And some people are on a spectrum of sociopathy,
mm-hmm,
where, you know, they forget that it's a level playing field of justice and they think that they're above the rules, that somehow they're entitled. I'm thinking one of my really awesome clients, I love her dearly. She's really made so much progress. I'm happy for her. She's moving on with her life. But, you know, she and her husband reached an agreement about finances. And now he's coming back saying how she's taking advantage of him and doesn't deserve this. And yet he's the one who had the superior income and is going to be just fine financially himself. So people who reach conclusions apart from rational means can rarely by rational means be persuaded to believe something different. And too many, you know, folks come at it from a self-serving perspective and they don't think very rationally and clearly.
So that leads me to ask your opinion on this. Do you think it's the chicken before the egg or the egg before the chicken when it comes to personality disorders? Can living a split life create a personality disorder, in your opinion?
I think living a split life can lead to a, I'm going to call it a fractured way of thinking, a disintegrative, that is non-integrated, a disintegrative way of thinking, of compartmentalizing things. And I think that can affect how one perceives their responsibilities over against another person and how they expect to live out the next relationship that they get themselves into. So I don't know that I would say it creates the personality disorder, but it can certainly lead to disordered thinking. And personality disorders are about various ways in which thinking is disordered. Now, some of it, if a person clearly recognizes their disordered thinking because it becomes painful and really feels anxious and they want to clear it up, that's a sign that there's really good underlying mental health, that they want to bring things back together and have some rhyme and reason. If they are in complete denial, that may be pointing more towards personality disorder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I think that when you live a lie and you're always having to make up a lie to cover a lie, that lying just becomes kind of inherent in your personality.
It becomes very easy.
I just don't know how you keep living all these different lives and looking over your shoulder, wondering when they're going to catch up, and maybe that also is part of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Of, you know. But one woman did just send me a letter, and this is from Annette. She said I could use her name, Annette, to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in Minnesota. And
okay.
She said, can you please ask Dr. Hooper why my husband, who never cared about my kids, is fighting me for them? For 17 years, he pretty much ignored them. Now that we're getting divorced, he wants custody. How do I deal with this?
Well, I hope Annette's got a good lawyer, first of all. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There may be various reasons that he's now wanting to have a relationship with the kids that he didn't want before. It may be a way of trying to hurt her. it may be a way of trying to win something and establish himself as, you know, a good guy who cares about his kids. You know, see, I want custody of the kids.
Some of the women who are in our group, you know, their husbands who really didn't care about the kids all along. I'm not saying they didn't love mm-hmm. them to the best of their mm-hmm. ability, but they really weren't mm-hmm. that interested in them. They're not mm-hmm. really connected to them. Mm-hmm. And now all of us, I think some of it is really a control issue. I mean, that's the way I see it
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
they want to have, and they're still torturing their wives, you know, or punishing them. And mm-hmm. the children really do become the victims in this.
Of course
I
they
mean,
do.
It's so sad when I see so many cases. Like Janine Finelli was on our show 2 weeks ago or last week, you know, and she's a health coach. And, mm-hmm. you know, she's going through this now. I mean, it's a shame that she has to go through all this pressure with somebody who doesn't really care that much, but just to make
right.
her, you know,
right.
suffer with
right.
this.
So, I think behind this is the man wanting to prop up his own ego by having, you know, the kids as his own, part of his bounty from the relationship. The thing is, it's really hard on kids, and kids do see through it.
Oh, no.
But it's confusing.
I just feel so bad.
It's still hard on them. Yeah.
Yeah, they're being
Absolutely.
Used as a pawn for a divorce game. And some of these women really are wonderful mothers. And their ex-husbands, you know, who are now on the verge of divorce, they manipulate the situation so badly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think these were people who were like this before. They didn't become like
mm-hmm.
this. Like you were saying, they had personality
mm-hmm.
disorders. They could have been, you know, borderlines or sociopaths
mm-hmm.
or narcissists or
yeah.
combination of all of them.
And just to be clear, neither you and I are saying that all gay men who are married and come out or are found out have a personality disorder, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah, okay. But there
no,
are
not
cases
at all.
Where we've got the men who are vindictive or they think they're entitled. And they don't want to do what's right by their ex-wife. They
mm-hmm.
it's all about them and them moving on. That's pointing to some sort of thought disorder or personality disorder.
No,
Absolutely.
There are some men who really are remorseful that, you know, they've taken up, you know, 10, 15, 20, 25 years of a woman's life knowing they could never truly
mm-hmm.
be a husband to her. And they really do their best, you know, to try to be supportive to their family, take the
mm-hmm.
pressure off the wife, share with the co-parenting, financially support
mm-hmm.
them. I mean, we do have a few women in our group like that, and they have very
mm-hmm.
positive relationships with their ex-husbands. And
mm-hmm.
they do family events together. They go out as a family. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's the best of all scenarios. And that's
right.
how it can be.
Right. It can be.
If you
if
have
people are
the
honest.
Right combination
right.
of working together.
Right. Right.
But in many cases, when men are first coming out, and it's nothing personal, but it's the reality, you know, many of them feel, I've been cooped up all these years trying to live a life
mm-hmm.
that's not mine, you know,
mm-hmm.
trying to make everybody happy except myself, and now it's my
mm-hmm.
turn.
And
right. all of a sudden, they're off to a new life, and they're not looking back very much. And
no.
that's not to say they're using sociopathic or personality disorders. The reality is, now it's their turn. They want to go out. They meet people.
As they see it, I would remind those gentlemen, if they were part of my practice, yes, you're excited about having your freedom and your new life, and you're going through your adolescence for the first time, really, because you didn't quite navigate it the first time because you should have been with boys, not girls. But okay, now you're going through this. But remember, you're still an adult and you have responsibilities. So we don't get to go through this without thought of others, particularly when there are children. But also you got to do the right thing by your ex-wife.
Right. And sometimes I think those marriages that were relatively happy are the hardest marriages for me to work with. You know, the women just
mm-hmm.
don't get it. You know, they say, well, a lot yeah. of you had bad marriages and this explained it. you know, you found the missing puzzle piece, and now you know why your husband's so unhappy. But our husbands always seem so happy and so loving and making plans with us and for the future and going on vacations. And then all of a sudden, one day, they figure out, I'm really gay and I'm not happy. Like, they just don't get it. You know, how is it a man can live for 25 years and appear to be happy, and then one day he's not anymore, and he's leaving you for a guy?
Well, and I think to compound that scenario is when they not only had that kind of relationship and leave for a guy, now all of a sudden they turn into, like, it's Mr. Hyde. They don't care. They are kind of mean. And in those cases where that's what's happening, I have to wonder if the whole time they were married, they weren't really looking in the mirror admiring what great husbands they were to their wives and admiring how they were taking them on vacations and admiring, you know, how good they looked to the rest of the community. And they enjoyed that feeling of that role more than they really were in relationship. I have to wonder.
I think that's very
happened.
True, too. I think that's a good point. Yeah. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, and you know, I'm thinking of a client I had very early on, a wonderful woman, when I first started being on your show, and her husband was, you know, he was very romantic and the gentleman and would plan the picnics and all that kind of thing. She had an interesting dream, Bonnie, in which she was out in a dark forest and there was this cave, and the cave was like a store, and there was this man behind the counter, and it was her husband. And he was the shop owner, and there were all of these diamonds in the case. But as she looked at them, she recognized that they weren't the real thing and that he was a trickster. And it became a symbol, a very profound symbol of what she had in her relationship. I mean, it was, you know, it was wonderful and mysterious, like the dark forest, and lots of shiny displays. But when you got up close and really looked at it, it wasn't the real thing. And he turned out to be, after leaving, you know, very narcissistic. So
it's
we
really
sad. None of that. Yeah.
I just had another lady write to us. Hold on one second.
Yeah.
She's, okay. She asked me not to give her name, though. She said,
yeah,
Dr.
fine.
Hooper, my husband admitted to having an emotional relationship with a man, but swears he wouldn't act on it sexually. Should I believe him? I want to, but I'm so confused. This is another thing men tell their wives sometimes, that they just are very attached. It's just an emotional connection. You know, they just want to be with that person.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, it's not a sexual thing. And honestly, Brian, I really don't believe it. Like when they're absent and they're missing too much and they're having more fun getting dressed up for the guy.
Right. So I think in the moment he says it, he may well mean it. The question is, can he pull it off and live with it? And that, I would say, probably not. So it doesn't necessarily mean that he's lying right now. He may well mean it. Like people who say to me, oh, I'm going to give you a call. Let's get together for lunch. And then I never hear from them. In the moment that they say it, they're very sincere. They mean it. But they don't have the capacity to follow through. And I think men that say this are deceiving themselves. If the thought of being in the arms of another man somehow takes him to a new place that he has never been with his wife, if he can admit that, then they need to go their separate ways.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not going to be able
to... Especially if she hasn't had sex with him in about 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. So as I say, interesting, it's the same phrase I use with straight people who keep trying to be in relationship with individuals who are not ready for relationship. I'll say to my clients, you need to remember this person you're talking to me about is not available to be in a relationship. And what I'll get back is, no, she's single. Of course she's available. I'm going, no. Everything you've told me, she doesn't have the capacity to be in a full relationship with you. She's not available. Oh, now I get it.
Mm-hmm.
She's unattached, but she's also unavailable. See, let me just summarize that. A person can
mm-hmm.
be available, a person can be unattached, but it doesn't mean they've got the inner stuff pulled together to be truly available for a relationship.
And that's true. Not everybody
is. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
And I also think that in a world today, which, you know, I can only say based on my experience of being older than you and living longer, but it seems to me that people are more dysfunctional now than they were when I was growing up. Maybe they hid it better. Maybe we didn't have terminology for it. But I saw more families stay together, more, you know, things that were accomplished, more things that today are acceptable were not acceptable back then. Certain kinds of behaviors that today people just think it's okay. When I was growing up, for instance, I always give this example. When I was in high school back in 1968, if a girl would become pregnant, she would be whisked away, literally,
mm-hmm.
into a home for unwed mothers. You were not allowed to be pregnant and be in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And you never heard from her again. It was just one of those
mm-hmm.
things that was not very respectable, and families didn't want to have to deal with it. Today, it's almost like, you know, so many high school girls are pregnant, having babies, and nobody
mm-hmm.
thinks anything of it. It's fine. So I think things have gotten so far removed from the way that when I was growing up, and I think values are so different today, and I just think that we've kind of run amok on a lot of things, but I think there's a lot more dysfunction today than that I see so much more. Maybe because I'm dealing with people who have so many problems. I'm not talking about my women. I'm talking about teaching in schools and stuff. That, you know, it's just like a new kind of normal, which to me is not very normal. So I think that today people have problems that, you know, they weren't expecting to have to deal with. And it's easy not to become really emotionally available when a lot of women are really afraid to get involved because they see what's around them. I have a lot of women tell me they don't want to be in a serious relationship. They don't want to get married. You know, they'll date or they'll go with somebody, but marriage is like out of the question. I think, oh my goodness, when I was growing up, marriage was the only thing you wanted to get. You know, I was always focusing, how
mm-hmm.
am I going to get married? Now it's
uh-huh.
like a totally
uh-huh.
different world, and maybe people don't have that same emotional connection. I don't know. I just think it's a different way of living today. Do you find that? I know you're not as old as I am, but do you think it's different than when you were growing up?
I think it's very different. If I gave my word as a kid that I was going to do something, unless I was at home sick in bed, I was supposed to follow through and do it.
Uh-huh.
And today, with the advent of emotive reasoning, which is not really about thinking things through rationally, it's about what feels good in the moment, with that kind of thinking as a basis for decision making, people are left hanging, and they then reduce their expectations as well. So, for instance, somebody commits to something, I'll be there. And if you're lucky, and they'll give you a call and say, you know, I just don't feel like doing this tonight, so I'm not going to do it. Let's do it another time, as if that's perfectly acceptable. as if there should be no expectation on the other end of actually fulfilling that commitment. And there's no thought that the person that you're leaving high and dry might be a little disappointed and crestfallen because you bowed out at the last minute because you didn't feel like being there. So the person who's now on the end, I've got one buddy, he says, I really don't get ready to go out the door until 5 minutes before, after, I've texted and found out if we're really going to do this or not. You know? I mean, so the bar, the expectation bar of behavior is much lower than what it used to be, I think.
I agree.
And so people make lots of...
I think it's not very encouraging.
They excuse themselves from having to really keep their word, and that then it ripples out and has all sorts of effects.
It does, and I think it takes its toll on all kinds of families, not just our kinds of families. I just think it's a world today that is very different, and once again, I don't know if it's better or worse. I don't see the wonderful results coming out of it. But I know that in the past, a lot of people stayed together because they had to, including people who are in these kinds of marriages, which is why so many people have been married for so long, because in the past, you couldn't just really just walk away from a marriage.
Right, right. And it was a commitment.
You'd have
to
suck it up and be miserable. Right?
Do you remember Leo Buscaglia?
The
writer Leo Buscaglia? Yeah, the love doctor from UCLA. Big Italian family, big Roman Catholic Italian family. He said, not once did my parents ever breathe the word divorce. And then he paused and he said, murder, yes, divorce, never. Because he said, you know, they weren't going to give up. I have two wonderful men who are a couple that are members of the parish that I serve on a part-time basis. And they have been legally married for years, well, since it became legal in their state, I should say. But they've been together faithfully, monogamous couple, for 17 years. And they said, said to me, when you're married, there's too much at stake. You work at staying together. And they love each other, and they do work at staying together. And I'm very proud of them for that. But they chose that external bond to because it fit their deepest values. And I think we need more of that among gay men. That's why one of the reasons I'm happy for same-sex marriage is because I think it brings a stabilizing effect to the gay community. And it says, hey, there is not just this one monolithic attitude towards relationship. We who are married or want to be married are saying that deep commitment matters, and now we have the legal way of making that happen.
Yes, and now you'll have the same kind of legal way to make it unhappen, just like so many straight marriages, where over 50% of the population is getting divorced. So this is a whole new field for divorce lawyers. It's gay marriages, right?
Of course it is. Now, there are folk like me who say, you know, you want to be married at this. Well, it's not just me; it's the policy of the parish that I'm part of. It. You want to get married, you will go through four premarital counseling sessions where we use standardized instruments to, you know, examine relationship, and we really look it over with a fine tooth comb to find out where the hitches are before people make that final commitment. You know, and granted, most of them are going to make the commitment anyway, but at least they've got some tools going into the marriage to work on the tough spots.
Well, we can talk about that on our next show next month. And anyway, our time is running out.
Oh, my gosh, we're there, aren't we, sweetie? Yep.
Yeah, we have 30 seconds left, and I want to thank you so much for the wonderful show and encouraging our women. And women, Dr. Brian Hooper has his website, give them the website address.
www.drbrianhooper.com. And Bonnie, tell them where they can find the link on your website to me.
Right on gayhusbands.com. You can go to my website, and under links, you'll see Dr. Brian's information. Or write to me at bonk@aol.com. If you need counseling, if your husband needs counseling, if anybody needs counseling, Dr. Hooper counsels by phone, by Skype, or in person if you live in Nashville. So, Brian, I love you. Thank you so much.
I love you, too.
And
my
I'll
pleasure.
Talk to you next month. All right.
All
good night, ladies.
Blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.